Now, how do you use special effects in a movie?
The special effects are just a tool, a means to tell a story.
Can you tell us the story about Cy Snoodles and how you articulated her mouth?
Well, the thing is, it doesn't have to be articulate. All it has to be able to do is open and close. It's like a binary system. It goes like this, wow, this. And it, you know, it can give you some room to come up with some lyrics and make a song.
Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I am Chris Gore, joined by a bunch of nerdy friends. Nerdy friends, including Darren Doctorman, who opened our podcast. Thank you for that, Darren.
Sure.
Anthony Ray Bench.
How's it going, everybody?
And Anthony has now seen The Last Jedi, also joined by...
Finally.
Charles de la Zurica. You never introduced my name.
I'm lazy. This is why I'm allowing people to introduce themselves. And my buddy...
Walter Arias, not known for anything in particular.
Exactly. So here we are. So we've seen the movie. We are going to discuss the film freely because it is now open to the public for everyone to see. So
you are now entering the spoiler-rich zone.
This is spoiler zone.
Turn back if you don't want to... Proceed.
Yeah, this is the spoiler edition of the Film Threat Podcast, talking about The Last Jedi. We are in Charles de la Zurica's hotel.
My penthouse suite with hot pink lighting and a Darth Vader and Stormtrooper lamp on each side of.
I didn't even know
it's a
Darth Vader lamp.
Hotel room.
Yeah, it seriously feels like that you're gonna shoot the nerdiest porn ever.
Yeah,
or a snuff film.
Okay, so but we're not here to talk. We're in the midst of Hollywood, which has gone crazy. Oddly, on a Thursday night,
we're
super excited about the fact that we just got out of the screening. I mean, we're excited. We'll see. Some people say 6 out of 10. Other people say 7 of 9. I have no idea. There's a lot of scores here. Let's get right into it. Now that we can speak freely, I want to hear the thoughts. Let's go around the horn. Let's start with Anthony because I have been fucking with Anthony all week because I have had 3 days where I've seen it. He hasn't. And I'll send Anthony a note and I'll say, oh my God, I couldn't believe how amazing, incredible, like I just had the best experience, .. eating a sandwich. And he has... Yeah, I've done that. Okay.
Yeah, first of all, Chris, fuck you. times a million. I really like went out of my way to avoid spoilers, all the TV spots. Like, I saw the second trailer once, and I was like, okay, this looks so great. I don't want to see anything else. I never watched it again, never, like, did any, like, you know, frame-by-frame analyzing like I did with The Force Awakens. I spoiled The Force Awakens for myself. But this one, I wanted to go in completely blind. I told Chris, like, I don't want to know your opinion. I don't want, like, a one-word review. I don't want anything. And that motherfucker just kept toying with me, and it pissed me the fuck off.
That was my opening and opportunity to just fuck with you. But, okay, so your impressions now, because you were pretty spoiler-free.
Yeah, I loved it. There were parts of the movie, at least the humor early on, that didn't really work for me. But... Man, that movie, like, I thought I knew where it was going. Like, it almost kind of felt a little predictable, almost like how The Force Awakens really mimics A New Hope. I felt like this was mimicking, like, The Empire Strikes Back. And then at a certain point in the movie, like, everything just, like, flips on its head. Like, I think that moment for me was when you find out that, you know, spoiler, Luke tried to kill Kylo. I thought that was really, really cool. I didn't know where that was going at all. But I really loved that sequence. And man, like, I cried like a baby when I saw Yoda. Like, that was my favorite part. Just seeing the puppet again. And yeah, I loved it. Solid movie. Definitely up there with my favorite Star Wars movies. So...
Let's go around the horn to we'll come to Charlie, you, but let's get the people who have not had an opportunity. Darren Doctorman is here.
Yes, Chris. I enjoyed it while I was watching it. And this is a bit of a revelation because I absolutely loathe The Force Awakens. I think it's a steaming pile of dog turds. But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like the play? No. But I enjoyed this mainly from the fact that it's so much better directed than Force Awakens is, and it has a much better sense of pace and character and setup and reveal and all that sort of stuff that is basic storytelling that the first one just doesn't have.
You know what my thought was when we first saw the movie, Charlie, you and I at the earlier screening, my first thought was this feels like a real movie. Whereas yeah. Force Awakens was like a George Lucas cover band and Rogue One was like a fan film, and this feels like a real movie from a real director and filmmaker.
I cried like a baby too during the Yoda scene for different reasons though. I really hated the Yoda puppet. I thought it was, it just completely unbelievable, and it looked like an actual Muppet, and it kept distracting me, and the sculpt, I don't know who did the sculpt, but I mean, the thing is that there exist in the world beautiful sculpts of Yoda based on, you know, the original molds and everything that exist. They are out there. I've seen them. People have them. And the fact that they didn't go back to that somehow is just baffling. And I just, you know, his mouth moves really squishy, and it just feels wrong to me. And Frank Oz is doing lovely things, but I think to me it feels like this is exactly what George Lucas worried about during The Empire Strikes Back, when Luke is talking to a puppet and you can't get it out of your mind that it's a puppet.
I'm just glad it didn't look like the piece of shit that was Episode One's puppet.
It's equally bad in my mind. Equally bad.
Not in my opinion.
Because this one isn't as well lit as that one is. So, anyway. But, you know, I think I give it, you know, a scale of 70 good, 70% good, and 30% bad. But the bad is really bad.
I think, because, I mean, I go back to when I watched the prequels, and granted, I was a teenager, but I really walked out of the theater just excited. I loved the prequels. And then, you know, they kind of, like, repeated watching, like, they kind of went sour for me. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this is going to be a similar experience where I walked out of the theater loving it, and then, you know, after, like, the third watch, I'm just like, you know what? There's a lot of problems with this movie. Mm-hmm. But
there's a group of us, I'll speak for myself, that are older, that grew up with the original trilogy, hated the prequels, but now like The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. And I won't discuss Force Awakens because I feel like it's kind of a controversial film, even more so now after The Last Jedi. But I liked The Last Jedi quite a bit the first time we saw it Monday, and I liked it even more the second time. I will say this, that the bad stuff in it is still bad, but it hasn't gotten worse like on the second viewing, whereas the good stuff got better. Like, I really thought, like, there was so many things I was looking forward to seeing again, and they were so wonderful to see, especially with, like, a completely virgin, you know, Hollywood fan audience, which we didn't get Monday, which is kind of mostly press and studio people. But to get a genuine fan reaction to some of these scenes was what I was most looking forward to. And since we can talk spoilers now, I feel like, you know, the scene when Kylo and Rey team up against Snoke, I love that moment. That is so great.
Oh, yeah.
Snoke's death was really surprising. I thought he was going to go till Episode 9.
Yeah.
He's out.
I was shocked by that. Yeah. And I love the way it was executed, you know, pun intended.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
But, you know, I think it's a wonderful experience more than a wonderful film, which maybe sounds kind of bullshitty, but I feel like...
No, I agree.
You know, when we get the Blu-ray and we watch it kind of like in that form, we might be more critical and might be able to scrutinize more of the problems or the issues, but I think with an audience, it's a blast. And I haven't felt this excited about seeing a Star Wars movie with an audience, frankly, since Return of the Jedi. Regardless of what you thought of that movie, that opening day in 1983 was, you know, it was like a religious pilgrimage to go see that film after Empire and Star Wars.
Yeah, that was the first Star Wars movie I ever watched, so it does have like a special place in my heart. You know, despite its flaws, it's still one of my favorites.
Well, it's interesting. You said your subsequent viewings of the prequels, they get less and less in your mind. It's funny because each time I watch the original trilogy, they get better and better in my mind, which is interesting. Because you know we were probably the same age when we saw our individual sets of Star Wars movies, but I think it's interesting what different areas of the audience can gather from these movies. You're identifying with certain characters, and sometimes you just like the space battle, sometimes you like the magic of the Force, whatever it draws you. I think it's interesting that it can pull in so many factions of audience to like this stuff.
I mean, like, another big factor is I never got to watch the original unaltered movies in the theater. Mm-hmm. So that was my first, major Star Wars, theater experience.
Sure.
I think I was just caught up in the hype. It had been 16 years since the last movie, 2 years before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch the prequels anymore. They're garbage. But when they first came out, I loved them.
Well, you should watch that documentary, The Prequels Strike Back. I think you might. What? I think, because it's made by...
Shameless promotion.
Right, no. Shameless, not for me. It's for a guy who, filmmaker, who made, this movie about, he saw the prequels when he was a kid, then he was a teenager, discovered the internet, and then realized a lot of people dislike the prequels.
What?
Walter, what do you have to say about Last Jedi?
I just loved it as a fan because going back and watching, again, the original trilogy, kind of skipping over the prequels. I really thought that Last Jedi was funnier than Force Awakens. I thought it was definitely more emotional, definitely hit on those heartstrings a little harder. And overall, I just had a lot of fun watching it. I mean, there's certain parts of it that I didn't like. I think we all agree that the space casino scene can, can get chopped right out of that film. But overall, I think I'm thinking what everybody else is thinking. Do porks taste like chicken?
Right. Well, the space casino scene. Let's talk about that because it just felt to me like a bad sci-fi channel movie shot in. I think Darren, you said shot in Vancouver.
Yeah. And again, I'm waiting for the whole time for Lando to show up. So to me, that would have been prime missed opportunity.
Yeah. The theater I saw it in, they literally went, aw, when Benicio Del Toro showed up.
Exactly.
I felt the same way.
Who is that character, Lando?
Exactly.
He's this great slicer, which I guess is hacker in Star Wars language. That should have been Lando. It should have been Lando.
But doesn't Billy Dee Williams have Alzheimer's now or something like that?
I'm not sure.
I think that's the president.
Yeah. Now the casino plant, or city or whatever it was, it sucked. It didn't feel like Star Wars. It didn't look like Star Wars.
Felt like a sci-fi movie channel.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of James Bond a little bit.
Shitty Roger Moore James Bond. I love Roger Moore, but
The thing is, it feels like your mom's idea of Star Wars.
Yes, yes,
that's what it feels like.
But say what you will about the prequels, but it felt grand, on a huge grand scope. This feels really condensed and just really kind of claustrophobic in a lot of ways.
You mean the casino planet?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's way too earthy. I mean, the fact they're actually champagne bottles and flutes and tuxedos that are barely from another galaxy. But you look at some similar earthy, potentially earthy situations in the other movies, like the sports bar in Attack of the Clones or the opera in Revenge of the Sith. It's like at least there's holographic projections and different versions of games or sports or even like the zero-G, Mon Calamari orb opera that we saw. It felt like it was from another galaxy, whereas this was straight up two degrees off Las Vegas. It was so earthy.
It's Reno. It's almost kind of like a slightly futuristic Casino Royale look to it, where it's just kind of like a resort.
I mean, you could look at it as a positive or a negative, but there is a really good part. You can go to the bathroom a lot during the film. There's this gap of time where you can just like every time you see Rose and Finn on the casino planet, just head to the bathroom, head to the bar. There, you have a lot of time.
Well, I would even argue that Benicio del Toro's character has a lot of those kind of moments where you just feel like it feels like
I would argue that maybe
he feels like a filler character to me, though.
Oh my God, where did that go wrong? Was it like, was it they said like do whatever you want, and then he was like trying out. Was he workshopping something that wasn't finished? What the fuck was this? I mean, and I would say the same thing about General Holdo or whatever the
Admiral, like
Admiral Vice Admiral
Laura
Holdo,
Dern.
Yeah.
Laura Dern's character, was also sort of a like. Yeah, I mean, I think Charlie, like, you was it you or Darren that said like, why wasn't that the way, like, Carrie Fisher, Princess...
Right, that should have been Carrie Fisher's character.
Right. Like, well,
who sacrifices herself.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Carrie Fisher, or that Princess Leia, didn't sacrifice herself on the carrier to save the whole thing is ludicrous.
That would have been insane.
It would have brought the house down with joy and tears and everything. It would have wrapped up the character just fine.
And it'd be the perfect sacrifice.
Exactly. But no.
Yeah, the weird thing about I liked her performance, but you guys are absolutely right. Who the fuck is this character and why should we care?
I felt like that character didn't belong.
Yes, because she had on a dress that looked like it was from H&M.
Yes.
Or maybe Forever 21.
Very earthy.
And it was like this weird purple hair. Yes. I don't mean weird. I mean like we see fucking purple hair everywhere. And a lot of people that get the purple hair, I've had purple hair once back in at one time. That was in the 80s.
It's spacey, Chris. It's spacey.
It's outer space purple hair is so common and sort of it's almost like basic I'm a rebel. I don't know. I just was like, Laura Dern's character was kind of lame. And then when they were both trying to say, you know, may the force be, we're saying it at the same time. You finish it. It was like, no, that wasn't a cheeky moment. It was.
We're not competing women.
Yeah.
We're not competing against each other at all. We're fucking friends.
I fucking hated it. I feel like there's a fan cut. Someone has to make a fan cut. Maybe a friend of ours named Cliff will make a fan cut where you take 20 to 30 minutes out of this movie. And you just cut from Finn and Rose just going to the other ship. Somehow they find a way to sneak on it. They don't need a slicer. They need to go to another planet to find a slicer to go to a. It didn't. No, just go like cut. The movie is. It's needs to be 2 hours.
Yeah, it felt like that whole location was just added in for filler because I feel like we could have had some kind of resolution there where they didn't have to go to a whole nother planet. By the way, the shit that you're on is getting blown to shit, maybe. You need to go to this other planet to get this guy.
Yeah.
And it sounded like they were trying to do a space heist movie and then they just said, ah, fuck it.
First of all, spaceheist.com is now owned by me. So if that's going to be a movie, Space Heist is my... Charlie, you have
shameless
something to
plug.
Add, I can tell.
No, going back to Holdo, something I noticed on the second viewing was when the Resistance shuttlecraft are getting picked off one by one by the cannons of the First Order destroyer, she is basically staring out the window at those things getting destroyed. Like at least 6 or 10 of those things get wiped out as she's just staring at it before she decides to hop in the chair and steer the cruiser back. And that was, like, really annoying to me this time. Like, that was just, like, I really do think you could edit this film into a tighter version. I'm not one of those people that say that, oh, cut 20 minutes out. Like, it's like the Mozart thing. Just take a few notes out. It's like, you can't just do that. But I do think there's a lot of fat in this film that could go. Whatever that adds up to, it adds up to. But that really hurt the character for me because, I mean, you're thinking, what are you doing? Why are you standing on the bridge looking out the window, looking at your people being just wiped out when you should be...
Well,
doing your thing.
Along the lines of it should be shorter, my idea to make it shorter is you cut right after Luke Skywalker steps out of that big door and stands in front of the walkers. Cut to black. Cliffhanger. Come to the next movie. You know?
That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. Although
I think
the moment
people would be pissed off.
What's that?
People would be pissed off.
People would be pissed off.
You mean like people were pissed off at the end of Empire Strikes Back?
I wasn't pissed off at the end of Empire.
I was too.
I wanted to find out what was next, but I wasn't mad.
I was mad too.
You're angry.
I was saying, what, that's 3 years?
Yeah.
And 3 years as a kid is 9 years.
Yeah. It's nine. It's nine in dog years.
Well, you can look at, scientifically speaking.
Or is that porg years?
When you're, yes, it's porg years. Yeah. They need to do like, oh my God, the porgs. Okay. For the moment, we can divert and talk about the porgs. They didn't bother me. I thought they were fun. Look, every Star Wars movie has something cute and comic relief.
I really think they missed a great tie-in with Popeye's chicken.
Popeye's porgs.
When they first get to the Lost Jedi planet, like, you see porgs in almost every single shot, and I just kept thinking, buy me, buy me, buy me.
I thought it was like saying, eat me, eat me, eat me.
That's true. Yeah, but look, there's something cute. You could go through every Star Wars movie. You know, look, the original, R2-D2 is cute. The Jawas are kind of cute. In Empire, it's the Ugnaughts.
Yeah, but they serve important roles in the story in addition to that.
Right.
You know.
Yes, I guess the Porgs are sort of
the
useless.
Porgs are like the cute version of Boba Fett.
Well, guess what? Everyone on the Millennium Falcon at the end of the movie
gets their own porg dinner.
You've got dinner porgs. They're like those, what do they call those little chickens that are like the little
porg?
No.
Rotisserie porgs?
Not rotisserie. It's the tiny
Cornish hens.
Oh, yes.
Porgish hens.
Yeah. They're porgish hens, which is going to be when you go to Star Wars Celebration 50,
well,
they'll have porgish hens in Anaheim, California.
It's porg, the other white meat.
Right. Right. Okay, let's talk observations. Couple interesting things that this is the most, and we discussed this. The first Star Wars trilogy, the original trilogy, George Lucas intended it to be a commentary on Vietnam. Then the prequel trilogy is really about the rise of a totalitarian dictatorship, which we might be living right now. We may or may not know. We don't know. It sort of creeps in. Who knows? You know, it happens. And then this one is really a comment on a lot of so many things. It's you know, there's animal rights and animal abuse. It's, you know, it's even like, you know, do you eat and consume animals with the porg scene we're talking about? It's also a commentary on profiteering from war, you know, with the scene with Benicio del Toro's character. The sort of only interesting thing that his character did was, oh yeah, you know, this is how these people make money. Oh, look, it sells to the other side too. Like, the best way, you know, to be free is not join, was his comment. So this is probably has the most social commentary of any Star Wars film we've ever seen.
But I think that that's not the primary message of this.
It's not.
This trilogy as it's forming. I think it's about letting go of the past, which Kylo Ren is all about. And I think that's a message directed straight at us as a bunch of middle-aged dudes in a hotel room in Hollywood doing a podcast about a Star Wars movie. I think it is like you have to not cling to these things so tightly, as I think maybe some of us have. I'll speak for myself. It's like I feel like I have spent way too much time of my life on Star Wars and obsessing over that. And the way that Luke tosses a lightsaber over his shoulder in the opening of this film, or the way that Kylo smashes his helmet, I feel like this film is all about destroying what we knew Star Wars to be in many ways. And I'm actually kind of excited that's the message. And like, there hopefully is a whole new bold chapter of storytelling. I'm not betting on it exactly. I don't know. It's too early to say. But I think at least they're trying to do new things. And I think Last Jedi, unlike Force Awakens, takes tons of chances and makes a lot of different stabs at trying new things, exploring new territory in a way that Force Awakens was reliving things we've already seen
you know,
over and over again.
New Force powers? Anyone?
Yeah, the Force powers were awesome.
The Force texting?
Yeah.
let's talk about that. So the Rey-Kylo Ren relationship is the most interesting thread in the entire movie to me.
Yeah. Oh,
in
absolutely.
In addition to like Luke. You know, Luke, there's Luke and then Kylo and Rey it's fascinating. But what's interesting is it really is a commentary on modern relationships, male-female relationships, because that whole like force, and it would be introduced by the sound, because the sound would kind of become a vacuum. And then you would realize like, oh, this is Kylo and Rey force texting. So they would force text. Kylo would send a dick pic or a lightsaber pic, whatever it is. But it felt like that. And then additionally, at the weird thing, when there's the Snoke turn, there's this post scene talking about Rey's parents. And it is all about Kylo negging Rey.
Right.
You came from nothing. You're whatever. That is a whole, the, what he's doing is a whole definition of a woman being negged by a man.
So
which
Snoke
is
basically,
what negging, what?
Snoke is basically Instagram is what you're saying.
Snoke is Instagram. No, negging is where a certain type of dude, sort of pickup artist kind of guys would like, they say negative things about a woman and
right.
the thing is that she wants the man's approval.
Right.
This is all like, I mean, you can read about this.
It's documented.
It's documented. But, I mean, it's a shitty thing that guys do. And this kind of, in a way, you know, like...
It touches on that.
It touches on that. Am I wrong or am I reading too much into it? Like,
you might be reading too much into it, but...
That to me, like it's another instance of, you know, kind of destroy what you know. You know, there's always been a chosen one, and the chosen one has always had a mysterious, you know, kind of background. And you know, spoilers: Rey doesn't have one. Like her parents abandoned her. Her parents sold her off for like alcohol, which I thought was hilarious.
Well, no, that was the primary villain in the film telling her that.
Right.
I don't trust him. I think they're... And also, it was left a little... This is... Rey's primary thing is my family. I'm waiting for my family. I got to get back to Jakku because I want to know what's up with my family. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is not a satisfying answer to Rey. It's not a satisfying answer to the audience. Even if that's like a cool thing, like anybody can be a Jedi, which bothered me with the prequels because the whole thing was it was, you know, a blood disease with the midichlorians. They've thrown that out the window, which I don't mind. But the idea that like... She came from nothing. I disagree. There has to be something, even if it's sort of like almost like, and there are parts of this that kind of felt a little Harry Potter-ish to me.
It's totally Harry Potter.
Okay, so.
No.
You?
I disagree with you so much. I want to punch you in the face right now.
Don't do that.
Again, it goes back to, you know, this is a new Star Wars trilogy. This is a new, like, feel to it. And, to link up Rey's heritage to something, I think, goes against what this movie sets up.
She doesn't need to be related to the Skywalker. She needs to actually have parents, which she does, unless she just, you know, sat on a...
She does have parents. They're in a pauper's grave on Jakku. They're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, like, the villain of the film is telling her about her, you know, her parenthood or whatever, her parentage. That sounds an awful lot like The Empire Strikes Back of Vader telling Luke, like, I'm your father.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be true. So I feel like Kylo Ren is being straight with her. I mean, the thing is, I think Kylo actually cares for Rey. You know, for whatever reason, like, it's dark and it's twisted and you know, there's probably a serious, like, you know, issues of, like, control that he wants to exert over her. I feel like he cares about her destiny and how it surely relates to him and maybe the whole... galaxy, but
plus he's stuck on a ship with dudes.
He's stuck on a ship with dudes.
So our stormtrooper.
Well, yeah,
there's a few females.
Yeah, there's a lot of females actually, but no, I do feel like there was a sensitive side to him in this that we hadn't seen previously. Where I mean, I'm not joking. It's like that scene where he's like, where he says, he actually says, please, when he says, join me. You know, I really thought that was an interesting dimension to this relationship that I hope evolves to an even stronger level next time. I'm not sure it will. Because that's the one thing we've been talking about all night is how episode 9 is kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Like eight really ends it on a very nice note. I don't know how you continue the story with 9.
8 kind of ends it. In my opinion, like, I'm good with Star Wars. Like, and in fact, that button scene that's at the very end with the little boy, these slave children, and also, if you know, knowing how fucked up our world is, our current world situation, I mean... Children are enslaved all over the world. Children are used in wars as soldiers, as sex slaves, as the world is a fucked up place. I almost feel like this movie in a mainstream way is sort of a call to in some sort of social justice. It can be, that's a mix. That's a whole other.
Finish a sentence, Chris.
I'm going to finish a sentence.
Yes.
I'm going to finish a sentence. All I'm just saying that, like, it's kind of a call to revolution from a certain part of society. What?
I think you're reading a little much.
You think
into
so?
It. A little
but
bit.
The final scene with the broom, where and the other thing is, we talked about this earlier. They're the best tech in the universe in the Star Wars universe, but the shittiest toys. From like Rey's little action figure to like the kids are playing with a little Luke Skywalker at the end, and it's like a shitty. Like, get some better toys in your universe.
Well,
Star Wars.
We're supposed that is actually a consistent thing throughout Star Wars since the holiday special.
Well, yes, but the thing, actually, the little boy with the broom is like, I felt like that was like a button to the end of Star Wars in general. It felt that way to me.
No, I thought that was like a brand new beginning. I thought that was a commentary on there's going to be kids growing up with this trilogy, and they're going to be playing with broomsticks pretending that they're lightsabers, much like we did.
I think that's Disney hoping for God's sake to please let there be kids constantly discovering Star Wars and wanting stuff.
Yeah. I agree with you that was kind of like a perfect ending for us. Like in terms of you know the original story.
I mean for me personally, probably the most iconic imagery of all of Star Wars, going back to like the Hildebrandt painting on the first mm-hmm. film, is the notion of a warrior holding a lightsaber up to the sky with a vast galaxy of stars above, and in each one of those stars represents a new adventure. You know, and it's like there's a whole possibility of stories that can be just born from this character looking up at the sky,
or a crappy space casino,
or a crappy space casino. But that notion of like that silhouette, it's very. And Ralph McQuarrie mm-hmm. explored that quite a bit in his own art, and I feel like that to me is the most iconic image in at least in maybe say the marketing of Star Wars, or at least mm-hmm. selling Star Wars as a graphic image. And I love that this film ended with that, essentially, of this kid
and there's
against
also
the horizon looking up at the sky.
Related to that, that whole scene is prefaced by these kids telling the stories of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it's contrasted with the Ewoks telling, or 3PO telling the Ewoks the story. Mm-hmm. And actually, it connects with one of the rumored ways that Lucas wanted to open up the Star Wars movies in general, which is Wookiees telling the story of Star Wars. You open up this book and there's a mother telling her children the story of Star Wars, and that's how it begins.
That scene is coupled with the line of, like, you know, Luke saying, like, I'm not going to be the last Jedi. Like, to me, like, that scene just sums it up. Like, there it is. Like, there's going to be these movies forever and ever and ever. We're probably not going to relate to them, but kids are.
Well, I will say, I think C-3PO told the story of Star Wars better because he had sound effects.
That's right.
When he told it with the Ewoks. But, okay, now we need to talk about, and everyone should comment on this, Luke. Mark Hamill does his best performance ever as that character in Last Jedi. I feel... I just, to me, Star Wars is about Luke. I feel like I wanted to be Luke when I was, I know everyone wanted to be Han Solo because Han Solo was cool. I wanted to be Luke. And I like that struggle of, do I want to be a good person or a bad person? It's about everything of like, do I make a good moral choice or a bad moral choice? It's about morality choices.
I agree with you. I like Luke in this. I think that occasionally he's teetering on being Walter Matthau.
I love Walter Matthau also.
I do too, but not as Luke Skywalker.
Well, but there were so many great moments. There's like simple, like just sort of weird Luke, like I fucked up the galaxy and the history of the Jedi is fucking up the galaxy, and I'm gonna go somewhere where I can't do any more
but
damage.
Here's the thing, but what I liked about the performance and the character in this film versus say some of the other ones is that, like in Return of the Jedi, which was supposed to be his, you know, his graduation to being a Jedi Knight, he became much more sort of solemn and priestly, you know, than he was
for apparently no reason.
Well, it happened just sort of like in between mm-hmm. movies magically something, but where he was kind of like this annoying kid in the first movie. Mm-hmm. He instantly became like this, you know, far more like a grounded, centered, spiritual mm-hmm. version of Luke. This version of Luke in Last Jedi kind of covers all of it because we see a bit of that. We also see grumpy old Luke, but we also get kind of like young asshole Luke in there every now and mm-hmm. then. I love that he kind of like, you know, he's kind of a dick sometimes. That's kind of fun to see because he was kind of a dick in the first film and maybe even Empire a bit.
I like Dick Luke. But wait. So the way it ended was, I mean, Luke becomes one with the Force.
Sure.
The great Jedi fade, right? They don't die. They fade away. Right. Obi-Wan, Yoda. Now Luke is faded. And that the when the sunset was coming, I think everyone knew, like, oh, shit. And the astral projection, Luke was a dick. Let's be honest. That was great. He was, with the whole brushing off.
Yeah, he was Chuck Norris.
Yeah, that was great. I love that they did the hair, that cheesy wig, which was, you know, old school Luke hair.
It was Return of the Jedi
hair. Return of the Jedi hair. Yeah, right. But now, like, there has to be Force Ghost Luke in episode 9. And what's interesting was, you talked about this, is that basically what Rian Johnson did is took everything JJ created and said, fuck Captain Phasma. Captain Phasma had like a nothing ending, right? Like, all right, Captain Phasma, like, here's, you know, that goes away. Like, everything's like burning down on the one super Death Star dreadnought thing. Like all the things that JJ created, gone. Like, I love that Rian Johnson just burned it all down and sort of left JJ like, all right, you got a clean slate, but I fucked with your toys.
Yeah, Captain Phasma, I mean, in the last movie, she was basically the Boba Fett. Now she's really the Boba Fett of the new trilogy, like hardcore. I like how you put it. Like, Rian Johnson, like, you know, the scene where Kylo Ren smashes, you know, his helmet, to me, was saying, like, I'm not Darth Vader. I'm not Darth Vader light. The scene where Luke Skywalker gets the lightsaber and tosses it over his shoulder, that's like, I'm not going on the hero's journey. I'm denying that. I love those little things. Like, they took what could have been a really predictable movie and just kind of gave it a really fresh spin on it.
Well, I do want to see a fan cut where Captain Phasma goes down and you hear a burp. I think that'd be... Okay. Reminder to Anthony to add a burp.
Like, but it has to be the Sarlacc burp.
It has to be the Sarlacc burp here. But
Captain Phasma, where?
Where? Yeah. But, okay, so where do we see things going with episode 9 now that there's kind of a clean slate? First of all, you have the Rebels are down to like 30 or 40 people on the Millennium Falcon, and that's it. And maybe a girl with Jedi powers is pretty powerful. Then you have Kylo with this entire First Order that's very well financed, clearly, and it has an armada. What happens? There's a signal. There's a couple things. There's a signal that goes out to the rest of the galaxy for help that is not... I expected the cavalry to come.
Yeah.
The cavalry came in the form of astral projection Luke for a final, you know, resolution scene with his sister.
With
Millennium Force Falcon dice. Force shiny dice.
How does that work?
How is that? Yeah, I don't know. But like, so now we have, and Carrie Fisher is not going to be in the film. Did they say out of respect to her? She's not in the next movie.
They haven't said anything.
No, they said they're not going to do a CG.
They're not going to do CG.
Right, they're not going to do
are they going to use, first of all, there has to be tons of footage, including deleted scenes of her. There's got to be other footage they can use that was shot during those two films that they could maybe cobble something together.
Or, you know what, maybe there's a huge leap forward in time between this. I mean, there was a 10-year gap between 1 and 2. They could do a 10-year jump forward. The crawl covers the death of Leia. I mean, I hate to say it. It's like they might have to just do that because that might be less painful than seeing a really bad CG Leia.
Yeah.
Or using old footage.
I told my girlfriend, I was just like, it should be a time jump.
So yeah. So what's speculation on 9? I want to hear from everybody.
It's gonna be shit.
Why? Because JJ's doing it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of JJ Abrams. Well, I don't think he can finish a story.
Yeah, true. But honestly, then look at the end, where, you know, General Organa's deferring to somebody like a Poe Dameron.
Right.
So maybe that's where we see her character take a back seat to things, and that's how they respectfully write her out of 9. Say, you know, she's essentially retired.
Yeah, that betrays the character, in my opinion, though.
Yeah.
Well, it would be good for a change to see a female character take a back seat to a male character. I mean, we don't see that a lot in movies. But what? I don't know. But yeah, no, I like the idea of like an older, grizzled, Poe Dameron, bearded, kind of gray on the sides, Reed Richards-ish. What?
With like patch over one eye?
Like a patch over one eye. Like, yeah, like, you know, 10 years in the future. Yeah. And like, no, this is, that's, see, I like this. Except JJ's doing it, so fuck it. So, what are your...
You know... It better be something good, because... I'm fine with it stopping here.
Yeah,
that's,
honestly,
that's how I feel. Yeah. I feel like I feel satisfied. I haven't felt that way. None of the prequels were satisfying endings.
No,
Force Awakens wasn't. Rogue One, we can talk about later. This is the first Star Wars film I feel satisfied ending it and actually maybe, you know,
I don't know,
going
maybe,
on a date.
Maybe Episode 9 is all R2-D2.
Yeah. to make up for the last
to make two. Up for the last two that he hasn't done jack shit in.
I don't know. I think it's going to be Rey trying to rebuild the Jedi Order and knowing nothing about it, just kind of making up her own rules.
Great,
awesome, with still no explanation about anything. And the whole freaking Mary Sue of it all that everyone complained about, the movie and complained about people complaining about it, has not been answered. Why does she know what she knows? Okay, how did she learn how to fly spaceships? That's supposed to be like a complicated thing, right? Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But certainly no one could fly the Millennium Falcon as well as Han Solo, we thought. How does she know all this stuff? It ain't just from picking up junk that doesn't work. We don't know any of that. We don't know if the Force has taught her. We don't know why the Force has taught her. We don't know anything. And there better be a freaking explanation, or that's bullshit, baby. Because it's just lazy. It's just lazy, and it means nothing. It means nothing if there's no meaning behind it. I mean, you know, that's redundant, but the same explanation of who the hell is Snoke? where did he come from? What was he doing when Palpatine was around? Was he behind Palpatine? Why didn't we know about him before? Where did he come from? Who the fuck is he? I don't know, and we still don't.
And I hope it's not explained in the extended universe. Like, I hate when that happens.
Well, it's just, you know.
Well, if you read the comics, the Dark Horse comic series, it was a four episode.
No, I'm not going to read. I'm not going to read the novels. I'm not going to read the comic books. I'm not going to listen to the audiobooks.
C-3PO has a red arm is because in the one thing the.
But hang on a second. If we were just going off the original trilogy, what do you know about Palpatine?
Well, you hardly know anything about Palpatine. Yeah. You just know he's the Emperor,
right?
And he's never called Palpatine in the
right
in the first three.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, why can't Snoke enjoy the same sort of mystery?
Because we have six fucking movies before him in this universe. That's why.
Right, but I mean, Palpatine was a viable character with nothing in before Jedi, really.
Right, but...
Or very little.
Well, not now. Now he has three movies of build-up.
I'm saying just look at those three. I'm not saying look at
the
prequels.
I know, but we're not in that world. We're not in the world of just three...
No, but we're in just three sequel trilogy movies, or two so far. Of seven and eight, like I'm just looking at trilogies.
Right, but no, but I'm saying is that we already have the world established at the beginning of the Force Awakens, okay, and the fact that they've already killed him off without us knowing anything about him, and unless he's coming back, unless he's a clone or something, that you know he's actually still there. Who knows? But it's just. You know, it's this magic trick that isn't satisfying.
What if he was astral projecting?
Well, that's true. You know.
That's something JJ would do.
Yeah. I'm sure he's thinking about it now.
Well, what I found interesting, because the screening that we all went to was actually a double feature. We went to the sequel trilogy marathon, where we saw The Force Awakens first, which we saw like two-thirds, and we were just like, there's a bar out there. Like, we all kind of left almost at the same time and got drinks.
Well, you left first.
Yes, I.
And then
started
after
the
10
trend.
Minutes, Charlie left, and then I figured, okay, they're just out there drinking. So I walked out.
Yeah, it was like, I've seen it. But what I found interesting is that the title for Episode 8 was in Episode 7. Snoke says it. He says The Last Jedi. So
it's in the opening crawl of 7.
Right. So. Do we know what the title of episode 9 is? And is it in episode 8? And if not, I'd like to hear your theories. What do you want to title episode 9, which will be the last of the episodic Star Wars films? At least from what we know, what they're saying is the last of the episodic. It ends the Skywalker saga. The 9 films is Skywalker. You know, 1 through 9, that's it, which is disappointing to me. You know, I would like to see more episodes.
I know exactly what it's going to
okay,
be.
Okay, so what
here's
is
my episode... prediction. It's called Balance of the Force.
Oh, damn it. It probably is.
I don't think they're going to go back to the word force.
Why not?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess when you line them all up, it's Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi. It's just, man, there's so many other words in the English language that we could
Well, what's your
there's
guess
so
on
many
the
other
title?
Planets we can go to. We haven't gone to those either.
Yeah. I think they should call it Big Ass Door, because that's mentioned.
Okay, nitpick. And you turned to me. It's the only time you looked at me during the film, Darren Doctorman, was you turned to me and said, who's God in this? Basically, who's God in the Star Wars universe? Twice they say Godspeed. And God, as far as I recall, the word God has never been uttered in a Star Wars film because there's no God. The Force represents, you know, spirituality in the Star Wars universe. There's no such thing as God. And so that and Big Ass... The word big ass is irritating.
Well, the closest, and it was retconned in the prequels, is Thank the Maker.
I like Thank the Maker.
I do too.
The Maker is whatever made things.
Yeah, but they retconned it into being Anakin, and that just makes me ill. But
wait, they did?
Yes. 3PO, when he sees Anakin, he says, oh, the Maker.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a retcon. I think it's just a joke. I mean, that's just, I think
it's. Yeah, but it's serious.
Ugh. The Maker, I
thanks
like.
Thanks for making the prequels even worse. Now.
But see, but this is what's, you know, the like Nerf herder. What the fuck is a Nerf herder?
It's a herder of Nerfs.
It's a herder of Nerfs. It doesn't matter what it is because
it's like a milker of moofs.
Right, but what I like about the language, the way language is used in Star Wars, and George was criticized quite a bit, like during the making of the first one, just because hey, you can write it, George, but you can't say this stuff.
That's your Harrison
my
Ford.
My shitty Harrison Ford imitation. But I like that because in context, I know what it means. I know what thank the maker means. I know it means thank to some spiritual on high thing. But to say the word God, I don't think God should be a part of Star Wars.
I don't think mumbo jumbo should have been mentioned in The Force yes. Awakens or the Irving boys. Like the name Irving is so, again, like that's not Star Wars to
or
me.
Or boyfriend. The word boyfriend is in
yeah,
there.
It's a little weird.
Do you have a boyfriend?
Water. Water being mentioned in Force Awakens I think is kind of weird. So it's like, I don't know. There's certain Earth terms that just kind of have been in the sequel trilogy now that weren't so much there. I mean, not really at all in the original trilogy. Little bit leaked into the prequels. I don't know what's going on. If it's lazy writing, if he just doesn't care.
I think it's lazy. It's really lazy to me. And I think that like when you know, like anyone who's read that book, The Secret History of Star Wars. I think most of us have read that book. Like the detail that George spent years working on that first movie, and it changed dramatically. And if that book goes through like every version of the treatment. How the care that went into it, and now these movies are written in what, 6 months or less? Like, I don't know how long Ryan Johnson, but I do know I saw a story Bob Iger was talking about. And this was because I watched the YouTube live stream of the red carpet, which I should not have watched it because the spoilers did leak out oddly from the cast. But Bob Iger talked about that they were headed to London for the premiere of Force Awakens and they were reading Ryan Johnson's first draft of the script for episode 8. Which he said was they were very excited about. So I'm not sure what the progression or what the time or like how I'm not sure how honest they are about the making of the movies, because what annoys me now is that the making of Star Wars has been retconned. Gary Kurtz's contribution has been diminished. Other things like I'm sure Darren, you could speak to that a lot too. It bothers me that like, The way that the stories are told,
the history of Star Wars has been crafted more carefully than Star Wars is now.
Right. It's kind of irritating. Like there's sort of this legendary status. It's now become legend the way it's been done. And so I don't even know how much truth there is to like Rian Johnson wrote the script. Well, I'm going to trust that he did. On social media, he seems like a very honest forthright guy, but I don't know what the truth is about the makings of these movies now.
And like, what elements existed previously to his involvement.
That's the question.
We don't know. And what direction was JJ going to go when he started on this journey?
Or how much... I know that there was one, at least they've said, that Ryan Johnson said, can you just have, instead of BB-8, can you just have R2-D2 on the Millennium Falcon? Like, that's because he wanted to do something with R2-D2. Mm-hmm. And R2-D2 has a couple good moments. So I don't think he's still...
Does he?
One. So,
like which one?
The scene with Luke when he projects Leia. I thought that was kind of...
Oh, yeah. No, nice. That's good. Yeah. I mean, Luke and R2 together are fine.
Yeah.
But R2's not with Luke most of the time.
No.
Well, and R2 is kind of like Luke's dog, so to speak, because the way that, like, even like you see Poe Dameron sees baby BB-8 and rubs him like a dog, which was weird, like, which is fine. Like, it's cool. You've anthropomorphized, a droid.
I'm a little, disturbed at him rubbing his ball. Seriously.
All right. Final answer on what is going to be the title. Balance of the Force seems pretty accurate, although I've always hated that because it just doesn't... Because there were theories about that Balance of the Force was going to be the name of episode 1.
Right.
Like, I just never have liked that.
But they've been promising it for,
So you think that forever. That's episode 9 is Balance of the Force?
I think, when Phantom Menace is already taken...
Right.
I think it's a good idea for the theme of the movie, but it's not a sexy title. It just feels kind of like, I'm not saying like the other titles are sexy, but I feel like Balance of the Force
Awakens ain't a sexy title either.
Yeah, but it's provocative. It has some sort of like sense of mystery to it. Balance of the Force sounds like a banking term to me. It just feels it's like a checkbook. I don't.
Charlie.
Yeah.
It is. I know.
You're right. You're right. Darren's always right.
I'm just hoping it completes the sentence.
Yes. That's my plan.
Mine is the Force hits snooze and rolls over and falls back asleep.
Right. I don't have... Balance of the Force, I think, actually, begrudgingly, will be it. I'm serious. When you said it, it was just like...
thereof.
Right. All right.
Lightsaber of Blood.
Yeah, I would love to see... Look, to me, the best title of any Star Wars movie is The Empire Strikes Back. One of the weakest titles is A New Hope. It's A New Hope is shitty. It's a shitty title for a movie. Yeah. So...
Well, that's because it wasn't supposed to have that title before,
It was never supposed to have a title. I don't know why it was ever called A New Hope. Charlie, maybe you know something we don't.
No, I actually think The Phantom Menace is a pretty good title, I got to say. I think in retrospect at the time, I thought it was terrible. But now looking back.
In retrospect, actually, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith are good titles in retrospect.
You know what a great title for the movies are? Star Wars. No episode names, just Star Wars.
Well, I remember when they were talking about Empire, George Lucas, a comment on discussing the score with John Williams. George Lucas wanted a different opening. He wanted like a different score for the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it was John Williams that convinced him like, no, it's just the same music. And I think it was John Williams being lazy because it's a minor complaint with this film is I thought that the music was a greatest hits. It was really just, there weren't, as far as I could tell, any new themes that
there was the Rose theme was the only one that I really recognize as a,
but even I couldn't hum it right now.
No.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's not...
And it suffers in the same way that Return of the Jedi suffers in a couple sequences by just, needle-dropping stuff from
the TIE fighter
attack.
Music,
Or even... It's evoking emotions from another movie.
Or the crate battle scene, which was just like... They did like sort of a setting up shot-wise. It was like, oh, this is Hoth. And then the one guy... Who is that actor? It's Salt. It was.
I don't know, but Gareth Edwards is the guy standing next to him, the director of Rogue One.
He tastes it, and it's like, it's not snow, it's salt.
Right.
Because it was a mineral planet.
Well, he was tasting the red.
Right.
The red,
right,
not
right.
the white.
Taste the red, don't taste the white.
Yeah.
Okay, so we feel pretty good about this. What rankings are we? We did rankings while we were drinking earlier at the Arclight. What are the rankings? I don't know if you want to give numbers to this, 1 through 10, or Darren, you did a very compelling ranking them in order. Well, let's hear your order and then ranking, we'll just yell at you.
My ranking is 4, 5, 6, 8, 3, 2, 7, 1.
Wait,
whoa,
two is
seven. Yeah.
Two is better than seven?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, sand is very rough. That's
it
all
is.
I want to say about that.
It gets everywhere.
It gets, it's annoying, sand. So
balance of the course.
Yeah. Oh.
This is a cop-out answer, but I honestly have to see the movie a couple more times.
Cop-out.
I will say, actually, on second viewing of Last Jedi, I enjoyed it more, mm-hmm. and I was really excited by the fact that there are so many great moments. There are moments and also lines where it's just like, I wanted to like pause it, but we're in a movie theater, and like actually write down some of the lines because they were really quotable lines.
You know what's funny though about this movie? We talked about this the other day, is like, even though there's a lot, really some great, spectacular, crowd-pleasing moments throughout, the plot, the basic stripped down, minimal structure of a plot is like a Battlestar Galactica episode. It really is. It's like 33, the episode where the Cylons keep showing up every 33 minutes or seconds. I can't remember, it was minutes. That'd be too much if it was 33 minutes or seconds. This was like that. It was like basically the First Order Armada just like chasing the Rebel Cruiser for the whole entirety of the film. And all these other stories branched off of that. But the core story, it's really super simple. I mean, really simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So does that hurt the movie if you think about it that way?
Or does it make it better?
Or does it make it better?
I don't know. I feel like there is a fan cut that's 20 minutes shorter that's a better movie. That just cuts out the casino stuff.
Yeah.
Cuts certain characters out that can maybe fix, like put Leia in that ship that goes hyper. I'm serious. What? That was a good note, Darren Doctorman. You should be on the story team. The story team.
Look,
at
we
Lucas.
Know the story team are wonderful people, and
yes,
they're awesome.
They're Mario
and they're,
Puzo.
They're quality. Amazing.
Right. I don't know about that. I don't know any. I mean, yeah.
Or as a, I'll give you the same quote that I recorded for a news radio. Interviewer, after I walked out of Star Trek VI, they asked, "Hey, what'd you think of the film?" I said, "Unbelievable."
I love it.
That movie hasn't aged well, I gotta say. Star Trek VI. It's worse the more I think about it, but that's a different podcast.
There's a lot of Star Trek III hasn't aged well. All right, so Anthony, take us out, and we'll say the final. Oh, yeah.
Charlie, are we doing rankings?
Rankings. Do the rankings. Okay.
You want to go?
Okay, sure. I'll 5, 6, 8.
Wait, what?
Yeah, 5, 6, 8.
Where's 4?
8 and 4 are tied.
Okay, 5, 6, 8, 4 tie.
Mm-hmm. Then 7. Then we go 3, and then 2 and 1 are tied for me.
Oh, wow. Ties. I never expected that. That's pretty
good. I have a tie in mine.
Okay, let's hear it.
4 and 5 are tied. Then 8. Then 6, then 7, then 1, 3, 2.
Ooh. Yeah. Wow. First of all, I love the 1, 3, 2, because I actually will defend episode 1 in retrospect because it's unadulterated George.
That's what I keep saying. It's pure, uncut, crazy George Lucas.
Crazy George.
Yeah.
It's crazy George. George was on an island. He was fishing. He was by himself, acting kind of crazy. He let his hair grow. He just did whatever he wanted. But it was like before, because I feel like episode 2 and 3 are a reaction.
Yeah.
A reaction to all the negativity that episode 1 got, which is really disheartening. Episode one took a lot of risks.
Chris, you have to realize that when you make films like these, it's sort of like poetry. The sections rhyme, and. I think the reaction to episode 1 was completely wrong, and it wasn't my fault. And if episode 1 doesn't work, it's because Jar Jar didn't work, don't get it.
Oh my god! All right, you know what? Do it! Okay. So I feel like I can't rank it. I can't really rank. No, it's too early.
You have to rank it. You asked all of us to rank it. You have to rank it.
I already took the cop out.
Okay.
Yeah.
5, 4, 8, 3, 7, 1, 2.
Ugh.
That made me queasy.
What?
You started so
well. Oh, six. Oh, shit. I forgot six. Wait. Let me get back. Okay. Five.
Wrong.
Okay, you know what? Who cares?
Go.
Who cares?
No, go, go.
Anthony, take us out.
No,
Turn in your Bantha Tracks card right now.
I have a Bantha Tracks patch on the jacket I am wearing as we record this podcast. But wait, so take us out and...
Let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here, you guys.
Oh, my God, let's get out of here.